topic for today is Who am I? Who are you? If I asked you this question, what would you say? You will say probably, my name is so and so, I live in such and such a place, and so on. But that is not you. That is your body. So who am I is a most fundamental question that has been asked repeatedly from time immemorial. It is one of the most fundamental questions existing. And our Shastras tell us that the beginning of human life is when we make such inquiries. Who am I? Where have I come from? What is it that is keeping me alive? These are very, very important questions. What is life? What is death? So we have to ask ourselves this question. Am I this body? Am I the hand? Am I the coat? You can point to certain parts of your body, but can you point to yourself? Who are you? Where are you in this picture? Is he the person? Is he the reflection in the mirror? Is that the person? There are many theories today, especially in science, which say that man is nothing but a collection of atoms and molecules. That is all. That is everything there is to man. All the emotions, all the feelings, activities, speech, everything is simply because of certain molecules and chemicals moving in a certain way in the body. In the other day in the papers, there was some article. One scientist says that when we hate someone, there is some technical thing that happens in the brain. So that is the feeling of hate, according to him. Or when you love someone, then that is some other part of the brain is activated. So they are reducing all human emotions, speech, activities, thoughts, simply to atoms and molecules. So this is the atheistic philosophy of today. They don't understand or even think that there could be something beyond this body. What is death and what is life? Most important questions, million-dollar questions, as they say. But do you know in the law how they define death? Death is defined as absence of life. Very interesting. But they do not define what is life. So then how do you know what is death? You say death is absence of life, but you don't know what is life. So how do you understand what is death? The idea of death has also puzzled people from time immemorial. What is this thing called death? We are all going to face it someday, believe it or not. Yes, it will happen to us, every one of us. Nobody is exempt. So what is this death? And what is life? So we cannot understand what is death until we understand what is life. And the scientists are simply explaining life in terms of blind chemical reactions or the movements of certain atoms and molecules. But is that life? The next time you appreciate the beauty of a rose, or the next time you have some emotion with a near and dear one, are you going to think it is some neuron in your brain that is activating or firing? The answer is life is consciousness. Consciousness means the ability to think, what am I? I am. The fact that I am understanding that I exist means that I am conscious. I am aware. I have the ability to feel pain, pleasure, emotions, etc. A stone is not conscious because it does not have the capacity to do that. So consciousness means that I can perceive and understand things. Rightly or wrongly is a different question. But I have the capacity to question or to understand, to perceive, to feel, and so on. Consciousness means to be aware, thinking, feeling, willing, with intentionality. That means intentionally I must be willing. Nowadays there are so many machines that appear to act like a human being. So there is a whole range of science of modern technology called artificial intelligence, in which they are trying to make a computer or a robot like a human being. And they say one day will come when the robot will be exactly like a human being and there will be no difference. He will also reciprocate all the emotions. He will also behave just as a human being does. This is their understanding, and they are moving towards that. They think they are moving towards that. Now, look at this example of this machine, which is programmed to come up with a statement, "I see red," every time it sees red light. Now, when you see red light, then you have a certain experience. But when a machine sees that red light, it may come out with a printout saying, "I see red light, I see red light." But does it undergo the emotions that you are going? No. So that is the difference between a machine and a human. Is man just a powerful computer or a robot? Imagine that there is a drama or any event that is being witnessed by a group of people. When they see, the audience sees the drama, then they go along with the drama, experience all the emotions, the pain, the sorrow, the happiness, etc., that goes on in the drama. There may be a video camera that is also photographing the same thing. The camera cannot have these emotions. The camera has no experience. It simply records. That's all. So then the question is that if the difference between man and the robot is of consciousness, of experience, then naturally the question arises, what is the source of this consciousness? When we answer this question, then we will get the answer to who am I? I am a conscious living being. But where is that consciousness coming from? The source of that consciousness is the me, that I. So what is that source of consciousness? To understand that, sorry to put such a gory figure, but sometimes these things are necessary. This is a dead body. Reflect now. What is the difference between this body and a live body? Consciousness. Consciousness is what distinguishes the two. But where is that consciousness coming from? Is it in the brain? Is it in the eyes? In the heart? Where is it? What is the source of this consciousness? Consider, for example, this small child here, and there is an adult. The consciousness of the child is there. The consciousness of the adult is there. The consciousness may be not much developed, but it is there. According to the development of the body, the consciousness is externally manifested in different ways. So let us see. Here we have an example of consciousness being in a small child or in a baby, and it is existing even though the body is so undeveloped. It exists in a human being also, in the adult also. So now, just ask yourself this question. When this child is feeling emotions, experiencing childhood, youth, etc., he also thinks himself to be I. I am feeling pain. I am this. I am that. And the adult also feels. So when the same child will become grown up, he will have the same feelings of I am hungry, I am this, I am that. So the body changes completely. But the sense of I-ness does not change. I am old. I am young. The attributes of that I may change, but that I remains. So what is that I? Now he is old, but he still thinks that I am I. I am not a different person. So what is that I that doesn't change even with the change of the body? We have all experience of this. We have grown from childhood to our present age. So what is that I that is not changing? Obviously it is something superior to the body. Also consider, we always speak in everyday language, this is my hat, my computer, my leg, my boot. We don't say I leg, I hand. We say my leg. When I say my computer, it means that my computer is different from me. Two of us are separate objects. The computer belongs to me. So when I say my leg, I mean my leg is different from me. My hand is different from me. If I say I leg, then I can say I am the leg. But am I the leg? Am I the hand? I am different from all these things. So again, we come to a conclusion that consciousness is something different from all these things. Now some people say that consciousness comes from chemicals. So our simple question is, if consciousness is coming from chemicals, the dead body is there in front of you, please put back the chemicals and bring the person back to life. Very simple, isn't it? Science has analyzed what are the chemicals in the brain. Analyze what are the chemicals before death and after death. What is it that has changed according to your science? Add that and bring the person back to life. But no, that is not possible. Why? Because consciousness does not come from chemicals. It does not come from any part of the body or the mind or the intelligence. Consciousness is something distinct from the body. Consciousness is not dependent on the body. It is superior to the body. And there are some more understandings of this. There is a very unique thing called a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience. There are many, many books and scientific research is done on this point. Out-of-body experience means that many times a person sees himself or herself from a point above, from the ceiling. And this happens many times for serious patients who are on the verge of death, near-death experience. And it has happened in so many cases that when the patient is being operated, the same patient, through some way which is ununderstandable to modern science, sees his own body being operated, and even though he is under deep anesthesia, he remembers and knows exactly all the operations performed by the doctors on him or her. There is a doctor called Dr. Michael Sabom in America who has done a lot of research on this and written some books. And he has studied all this and come to the conclusion that we cannot explain by modern science how this thing is happening. When the person on the operation theater, on the table, is completely unconscious under heavy anesthesia, how does he know what is going on around him? We may say, well, that he says he saw himself, but he could be lying. That may be. But how does he know how many people were there, what procedures were performed, what conversation was going on? And they confirmed that the anesthesia was working. Otherwise, he could not have been alive. I remember some months, years ago, in Bombay, one of our devotees, she was a lady doctor, and she was doing MCH, that means cardiac surgery. After MBBS, there is MS or MD, and then there is super specialization. So she was getting trained in heart surgery. So I requested her that when you are there, why don't you also look for such cases? It may be very amazing. You will be able to establish for the benefit of those who are skeptics that there is something beyond this body. And to her utter surprise, in the very first week after I told her, she discovered such a case. There was one lady from the village in Maharashtra who came to Bombay for a major operation. She was illiterate, an elderly lady, and she was put under deep anesthesia, naturally, for a heart operation. And after the operation was over, she described exactly what was going on. Although there was a kind of an obstruction between at her throat level, so she couldn't see anything below, even by chance if the anesthesia reduced. And she described accurately. And she said that I came above myself and I saw. And to test her, this lady doctor asked her many questions. Because she herself was in the operating theater at that time, she knew exactly what had happened. And the account of this lady was perfect. And there was no way that this illiterate lady could have concocted or manufactured this. But when this lady doctor told it to her head of department, immediately the whole thing was hushed up. Shh, don't say anything like this. Don't speak, don't rock the boat. So people don't want to understand true knowledge. They don't want to know what is beyond this body. Anything for which they feel that there may be some threat. So there are so many cases like this. So how does one experience or explain this near-death experience, out-of-body experience? There are many, many people who have experienced this. Many may be frauds or hoaxes, agreed, but there are many which are actually been verified to be true by people like this Dr. Sebaum. So what does it mean? That who is observing? If the consciousness is coming from the body, then who is this who is observing from the top? Then also there is a case of past life memories. There are some people who remember their past life. And this has become a matter of serious research even in science. And there is one Dr. Stevenson who has been doing research for decades on this subject. And he has done years and years of research in India. Personally also I have met many such people. I remember one very senior officer in the Indian Railways. One day I had given a lecture on reincarnation, very basic talk like today. And he came and told me, I found the lecture very boring. I said, I'm sorry, next time I will try to make it more interesting. So he said, no, not because of that. Because for me, I don't need all this proof and so on. I already know what I was in the previous life. I have very clear, distinct memories of my past life. And then he described his whole detailed life, what he was, who he was, where he was born, and so many things. So there are people like that who remember. And by Dr. Stevenson's research, here is one little story. There is a lady in the background whose name, or this child rather, this child's name was Shukla. Now she was born and in some village in India, and right from childhood, she was always cradling a doll in her hand and calling this doll as Minu. And she was always fondling the child like a mother would fondle a child. And from the time she was able to speak, she was always describing that her daughter's name was Minu. And then she was explaining what her name was, that she was a lady called Mana and Minu was her daughter, and the daughter died at a certain age. Child, and in this way she explained in great detail, and she explained that actually not the daughter but the mother herself had actually died early. Dr. Stevenson reached there and took the child along with the parents to the city or the village called Bhatpara, which is long far away, where the child claimed that she was the mother of this child in the previous life. And in a crowd of 30 strangers, this little child, Shukla, identified who she believed, said, was her husband of the previous life, her mother-in-law, father-in-law, brother-in-law, and many other neighbors. She went inside and identified certain confidential places in the house where certain jewelry was kept and other things which nobody except a family member would know. And then they checked the records and they found, when they asked the people, that there was indeed such a lady called Mana who had a daughter called Minu, and this lady Mana died because of some problem and she was reborn as this child Shukla. So there are dozens and dozens and dozens of such instances. So obviously the question arises that if somebody is remembering the past life, obviously consciousness cannot come from the brain or the body. Because at the time of death, the brain and the entire body is fully destroyed. So who is it? How is it possible that the person is remembering something of the previous life? Unless there is a connecting link. So if there is a connecting link, it means that connecting link is not destroyed at the time of death. And that connecting link must be superior to the body. It must be different from the body. This is the logic for understanding that consciousness is distinct from the body. There is something else, not the body, not the brain, not the mind, not the chemicals, that is a source of consciousness. So modern science is not able to answer this question. But Bhagavad Gita has a clear answer to this question. Bhagavad Gita is a science of the soul. The Bhagavad Gita says that it is a soul that is actually the source of consciousness. You can see the body. And the soul is there, that star in the region of the heart. The consciousness is coming from the soul, just like sunlight comes from the sun. The sun is situated in the center of the solar system, and the light from the sun spreads out everywhere throughout the solar system, to every corner. Similarly, the soul is located in the region of the heart, and from there, the consciousness spreads out to every corner of the body, to the tip of the toe, to the tips of the fingers, to the skull, to every part of the body. Just like the sun spreads sunshine. Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna, Avinashi tu tad vidhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. He says that please know that this consciousness is imperishable, it is immortal, and the source of that consciousness is the Atma, the soul. The consciousness actually flows through the blood and it is distributed throughout the body. Therefore you note that sometimes when you restrict the flow of blood, you become numb. That part of your body becomes numb. Why? Because when the blood flow is not there, there is no consciousness. And when there is no consciousness, there is no feeling, no experience of anything. So in other words, the soul is a seat of consciousness. It is a symptom of life. So how do we know that a living being has a soul? Simply by the fact that he or she is conscious. Just like if I am sitting here in this room and if it is daylight, I don't see the sun. But simply by seeing the sunlight outside through the window, I can understand that the sun is present. Similarly, simply by observing that there is consciousness, I can understand that there is soul. And when there is no consciousness, there is no soul. So, Lord Krishna gives the knowledge of the soul, which is the real I, in the Bhagavad Gita. The soul is Satchit Ananda. Sat means it is eternal. Chit means it is full of knowledge. Ananda, it is full of happiness, full of bliss. It is located in the heart. It is inconceivable. It is the size of a soul, it is 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. Balagra shatabhagasya radhakalitasya cha. If you perform one experiment, of course you can do it, but I cannot do it. You take one hair from your head and take the upper tip and divide it into 100 parts. Take one of those parts, divide that one part into another 100 parts. Now that one part that is finally left behind is the size of the soul. That is the real you, the real me. So the next time somebody asks us, who are you? We should say, I am spirit soul, 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. That is the I and the you. So the soul is part of spiritual energy. It has individuality and it has so many different qualities. The soul has form, and actually it is the soul that gives form. Matter or not form, some any force has to give it form. But the soul on its own, the connecting to it, has no form. When you put your hand into it, then the glove gets form. The noise, but form, because the soul is present.
And when the soul leaves, it will eventually astonish the form will disappear. The soul also has other difficulties. What of the soul? The soul cannot be destroyed by the soul cut or destroyed by them. The soul cannot be burnt by it. You can see it with your normal eyes. The soul is the existence of soul by your senses, because it is beyond sense perception. So the soul is actually an individual personality with beautiful form. But presently, because we have forgotten God, this form is just a seed. It is in seed form now. So here, you are seeing so many different species of life. On one hand, you may have some small animal or an insect, or you may have a huge animal like an elephant. From the microbe or the bacteria, right up to the body of the elephant. It is the same Atma, the same spirit soul that is powering the body. Just imagine how astonishing this is. 1/10,000 of a soul, when that part of the soul is away, so it is a bacteria. It is the same soul that is powering the body. So this explains the soul is very amazing. So what is the difference in spirit and matter? It is a mashup of our body and us. And other because its forms are ever changing. It is full, but matter is achit, not atma is ananda. So we are citizens of this part will form. Spirit is there in which matter can not have form. Otherwise, matter has no form. Consider, we are away at the temple end. Oh, he has passed away. Who has passed? It is still there, still lying on the bed. So why do you say he has gone? He has passed away. He is still there, all the chemicals are there, the body is there. Who has gone? Who has departed? It is the soul that has departed. So meaning death. Death means the departure of the soul from the body. So we do not even know who are the people we really love. Our family members, we think we know them, but we don't know them. These family members also thought that they knew this person who was their relative, but they did not know. Actually speaking, who is the person? They only love the body. They didn't love the soul, but the soul is a real person. But they didn't know that. So they were thinking that the person I love is the body. But now, will they love this body? What will they do with this body? They will dispose of the body very quickly. In other words, who is the person we love or we hate? It is the Atma. The Atma is what makes the body appear alive. And when the Atma leaves the body, we say it is death. That is all. So we have answered the two questions. What are the two questions we have answered? What is life and what is death? So what is life? Life is consciousness, and consciousness comes from where? From the soul, not from any other part of the body. And what is death? Death is when this consciousness or the soul leaves the body. Very simple. Because the soul is eternal. The soul has no death. The soul has many different dreams. Abhatva, Torihashva, Yam Puran, Yadhashari, Kulkrekne, Taspati Jai, but is unborn. Is Aja, unborn. Nahanyate, Hanyamane, Sharire. When the sharir or this body is destroyed, the soul is destroyed. But all else is alone. So your body, my body, and your body is much. So it is surprising to note that our body has always been dead. Now as you are sitting in the class, this lecture, your body is still dead. And even in future, your body will remain dead. Why? Because the body is simply a gathering of atoms and molecules, some chemicals, some flesh and blood and so on. It is simply a form of matter. Matter doesn't have life. So our body doesn't have life. So, the moment you know as you are both there, it is both. But the Atma is there. You are there in the matter, make alive. So the matter, while you are alive, you are there. I am body. You are within your body. So therefore it appears that you are alive. But actually the word I is like a word I are. Just see the comparison between the body and a car. We have a mouth to speak, the car has a horn to speak. We have eyes to see, the car has headlights to see. We have a heart to pump blood, the car has a radiator to supply water. We have hands and legs to move, and the car has four wheels to move. But the car cannot budge even an inch. The slide cannot move, cannot talk, cannot feel, will, think, etc. without the soul inside. Experience. Even a dog starts chasing the vehicle. You have experience? Because the dog thinks, oh, this is some new animal. Some new competitor has come into my territory. So he starts chasing the vehicle. He doesn't understand that it's the same old human being, my good old friend. Only thing is, he's in the vehicle. But because he doesn't have the intelligence to understand this, he immediately feels threatened and runs after the car. So similarly, one who is devoid of spiritual knowledge is alive. No. Is the car at any point of time alive? Even though the car is moving, the car is making sound, the car is seeing apparently, the car is doing all the motions that our body does. But will any sane person say that the car is alive? The car is always dead. It only appears to be alive because the driver is within. Even if all the parts of the body of the car are in perfect order, but if the driver is not there, it will not move. Similarly with the body and the soul. Even if the body is in perfect functioning order, but if the Atma is not there, then the body cannot function. The Atma is like the electricity that makes a television or an instrument work. When the electricity connection is cut, the television stops working. So similarly, when the soul leaves, that connection is cut, and the body becomes just what it is, a lump of dead matter. The harsh reality of the cherished body. Nobody wants to touch a dead body when the beautiful spiritual spark leaves it. So that means, what is it that is made that body beautiful? It was a soul. It is not the body. Because when the same soul left the body becomes ugly, and we don't want to have anything to do with it. Immediately we rush to the crematorium to cremate the body. Are you a bag of flesh worth ₹110? Sorry to use a little harsh language in the slide, but this is the reality. This is the truth. Scientists analyze that all the chemicals of which your body is made up, if you got them all together and sold them in the market, in the chemical market, you will get only a few hundred rupees. This data is a few years old. So let us take inflation. So maybe you will get 300 rupees for your body. But how much are you willing to spend when even you have a small disease? Even if your part of your finger is cut, when the finger is lying on the street, it has no value. But for that little finger, we are willing to pay so much money. We are willing to pay lakhs of rupees for a body that is worth only 300 rupees. It doesn't make business sense. But then, this is not a matter of business. Then what is it that is giving value to the body? It is the soul. Actually speaking, the body has no value, practically speaking. The body is simply a source of problem and impure things. It is simply a bag of flesh. But still we adore it so much. We think that it is so beautiful. It is so nice. It is so wonderful.
What is beautiful and nice about this body? Nothing. It is only the soul that gives us the illusion that this body is a nice thing. The soul is a substance. The body is just a shadow. The body is constantly subjected to the four miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. But the soul is never subject to these things. The soul remains Satchidananda. So let me tell you a little story. You see this old lady. She had this parrot in the cage. And she was very fond of the parrot and the cage. And every day with a brush she was cleaning this golden cage. It was made of pure gold. No adulteration. And she was cleaning it very nicely every day. But she only made one mistake. She forgot to feed the parrot. So every day she was cleaning nicely. But what happened to the poor parrot? You can see. It is hanging its neck outside, too tired even to ask for food or water. It is on the verge of death. So this is our society. The cage polishing society. The body is like the cage. The parrot is like, or the soul is like this parrot. We are simply concerned with fulfilling the demands of the body, but we are neglecting the demands of the soul. The soul is hankering for God. The soul wants service to God. The soul wants bhakti. But the body wants other things. So we are so busy looking after the needs of the body that the soul is unhappy. So how can we be happy in life? You can see again the parrot and cage example before on top, and below the man is simply trying to fulfill the needs of the body, eating, sleeping, all kinds of luxurious comforts. But without satisfying the needs of the soul, can we ever be happy? This is a fish, Mr. Fish. Mr. Fish was taken out of the water and it was given a very nice situation to be in. He had a nice armchair, nice money and food and all kinds of things and comforts and pleasures in life that everyone is looking for. But do you think Mr. Fish was happy? No. Why? Because the fish was out of its natural environment. What is the natural environment of the fish? The water. So similarly, the soul is out of its natural environment because we are simply concerned with bodily things. We are not concerned with spiritual things. Therefore, the soul in this alien environment is left with its needs unfulfilled. Therefore, we are like fish out of water, unhappy. Whatever you may give, you may have millions of rupees, you may have many bungalows, you may be the king of the country, but if your soul is not fulfilled, you will remain unhappy. So the soul is the spiritual energy of God. And there is also the material energy. The material energy is what we see around us in the world. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has explained, Bhumirapo nalavayu kam mano buddhir evacha ahankar iti yamme binna prakritir ashtadha. He says that my material energy is made up of eight elements, ashtadha, binna prakritir ashtadha. And what are those eight things? Bhumi or earth, apah, water, analah, fire, vayu, air, or kham, ether. And he says there are some subtler elements also. Man, buddhi, ahankar. So the first five are called the gross elements. The next three are called subtle elements. Stool and sukshma. So as you go down from number one to number five, the items get subtler and subtler and subtler. Water is subtler than earth. Fire is subtler than water. Air is subtler than fire. Ether is subtler than air. Mind is subtler than ether. Intelligence is subtler than mind. ego is subtler than intelligence, and subtler than all of these together is the Atma or the soul. But the soul belongs to another energy. The soul is another energy of God. It is not part of this Prakriti, Ashtadha, of this eight division Prakriti. It is in its own category. Aparayam itaspanyam prakritam vidhine param jiva bhuta mahabhaho yedam dharyate jagat. Lord Krishna explains that, my dear Arjuna, apart from this material energy that is made up of these eight things, there is also the jiva bhuta, the spirit soul, yedam dharyate jagat, because of whom this material world is being maintained and sustained. So the soul belongs to the para prakriti, the superior energy of God, the spiritual energy, whereas the body and all material things belong to the inferior energy of God, the material energy of God. So our body is made up of these gross elements and these subtle elements, these eight things, but our Atma is belonging to the spiritual energy. So this is how the mind works and the body. We have the gross body and we have the subtle body. The subtle body consists of the mind, which is a storehouse of thoughts and unfulfilled desires and previous experiences. And we have the intelligence, which is subtler than the mind, which is a decision maker. I should do this, I should not do that. And then there is the senses, which are extensions of the mind. We have five senses: the eyes, the nose, the tongue, ears and the skin. These are called the Jnanendriyas. Indriya means senses, and Jnanendriya means the senses to acquire knowledge. We see through our eyes and obtain information about the world. We touch something and obtain information about the world, and so on. And these sensations are perceived in the mind. For example, I hear a sound, and the mind experiences it as pleasing or unpleasing. So the mind experiences what the senses perceive. And then the intelligence analyzes that and says, no, no, I should not hear this, or I should hear this. And the intelligence then directs the body to act in a particular way. Just like an alcoholic is walking past the liquor shop, his eyes fall upon the liquor bottles displayed. Immediately his mind says, I want it. Intelligence says, okay, I will make arrangements for you. So intelligence tells the body, turn right, turn left, go straight 10 steps. So the body turns left, right, goes ahead, sits inside. Give me such and such brand of this liquor. Intelligence is the one that makes the decision. So all these things are like a chariot. In the Upanishads it is explained that the body is like a chariot. The senses, the five senses, are like the five horses. The mind is the reins that hold the horses. Intelligence is like the driver of the chariot. The chariot itself is like the body. And the soul is the passenger who is sitting in that chariot. Now, imagine for a moment that if the driver is weak, or he is careless, or he doesn't know how to ride or control the horses, then what will happen? He will let the reins loose. Once the reins are loose, then the horses will be uncontrolled. And therefore they will run here and there. One horse running in one direction, another horse in the other, the third in the third direction. And what do you think will happen to the chariot? It will simply just overturn and go here and there, and there will be chaos. And then what happens to the poor passenger? He will be completely miserable. So similarly, when our intelligence is weak, when it has not been sufficiently nourished by spiritual knowledge, at that time the intelligence cannot control the mind. We saw in the example of the alcoholic, the mind said, I want alcohol. But if the intelligence had been strong, he would have said, no, not good for you, don't go there. But in this case, the mind was stronger than the intelligence. So mind prevailed upon the intelligence. Intelligence knew very well that tomorrow I will have a problem. I am going to spend so much money. I will suffer. I will be lying in the gutter in the night. But the mind is too strong for the intelligence. Mind says, no, I want it. So, when the intelligence becomes weak and the mind becomes strong, then what happens? That the chariot driver is not able to hold the reins properly. Then the senses, the horses go here and there. Chaos. So therefore, we must listen to the voice of the soul. The voice of the soul is, I want God. And the mind is saying, I want liquor. So if that man had listened to the voice of his soul, then immediately the intelligence would have become strong. Intelligence being strong would have controlled the mind, and the mind being strong would have controlled the senses. So this is the way in which the whole mechanism of the body goes on. So our job should be to uncover those impurities which are covering the soul in our heart, so that we can hear the voice of the soul, and therefore we can move in an orderly fashion. Now, the soul also leaves one body and occupies another body. We heard that the body perishes at the time of death, but the soul does not perish. So naturally the question arises, what happens to the soul? The body dies, but where does the soul go? The soul leaves one body and occupies another body after death. This is called the law of transmigration, punarjanma. And the soul first occupies a human body when the soul first comes to the material world. And depending on the karma, of which we will hear more tomorrow, then he may occupy a donkey's body, a cat's body, this body, that body, depending on the karma. So in all these bodies, the Atma is similar, but the bodies are different. The material body undergoes changes, but the soul never changes. The soul rather goes to occupy another body. Many times people ask, what is the proof that the soul exists? We discussed that. But people also ask the next question, what is the proof that there is a next life? So let us discuss some logical points. Of course, the proof that there is a next life, we also saw in the case of past life memories. But even logical proofs, let us discuss. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord Krishna gives the first logical proof to show that there is a next life. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhiras tatra numuhyati. He says, just as the soul changes in this life different bodies from childhood to youth to old age, similarly the soul leaves the old body and accepts another body. This is the picture that illustrates this verse. As soon as the child is born, it is so tiny. Then it attains boyhood, youth, middle age, old age, and finally death. But all through, has the body been the same? The body has changed completely. In fact, if you keep the picture of the child and the same child when he is an old man, side by side, will you be able to recognize that old man and the child as the same person? The bodies are completely different. So what to speak of next life? Even in this life, we are constantly changing bodies. Do you know that medical science says that every 7 years, you have a completely new body? Every cell of your body that was existing 7 years ago has perished and you have a new cell now. So you are not what you were, at least your body is not what it was 7 years ago. Even from the time you came into this temple for this session and from the time you leave, you are going out with a changed body. already so many cells have died and some new cells have been created in your body. So even as you sit here asking, is there a proof for next life, you are already changed bodies. So Lord Krishna says that just as you change the Atma, you can see the Atma has been pictorially represented as a spark. So even as the Atma changes bodies in this life, similarly it is logical to assume that at the time of death, the Atma changes that body when the body is destroyed and goes to another body. So that is death and birth. The second proof is that the body is just like a dress for the soul. Vasansi jirnani yathavyahaya navani grahnati naroparani tatha sharirani yahaya jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. When we go home and we change our clothes, our family members still recognize us, isn't it? They don't say, who are you? Yesterday you were wearing red shirt, today you are wearing blue shirt, I don't recognize you. Nobody says that. Why? Because they know that you are the same, only your shirt has changed. So why should they worry? Why should they lament? So this body is simply a dress that is given up by the soul. And when you change, take off one dress, you wear another dress. It's natural. So similarly, when the soul gives up one dress, that is the body, it accepts another dress. This is transmigration. This is punarjanma. There is nothing surprising about that. So this is the second logical proof, that the body is like a dress, and the soul discards one dress and takes on another dress. So therefore, dhiras tatra na muhyati. A dhir, one whose senses and mind are controlled, one who is situated in perfect spiritual knowledge, never laments at the time of somebody's death, because he or she understands that the soul has not died. The soul is eternal. It is only that the soul has changed the dress. This body was unfit as a vehicle to contain the soul. And now, the soul has left the body. Just like when your car becomes old, or your dress becomes old, you change it, you get a new car. Similarly, when your body becomes unfit for habitation, for residing, then you move out. You, the soul, move to another body. Similarly here, let us examine. Here is an old man. He is about to die. He has so many unfulfilled desires. So what happens at the time of death? Because the Atma is there. So what happens to all these unfulfilled desires? He gets a chance to fulfill them in the next life. Only a person who has fulfilled all desires, who has no more desires left, doesn't have to take birth again. Everybody else will have to take birth again. So naturally then the question arises, that why is someone born in a family that is wealthy, and why is someone born in a poor family? Why is someone born very beautiful and someone born very ugly? Why is someone born very intelligent and someone born mentally retarded? What is the fault of the child in this life? We cannot explain this disparity unless we bring about the concept of a previous life. Because there is a previous life, there were unfulfilled desires, there were activities, karma, done in the past life, and based on that, we are getting an appropriate body in this life. So even from the logic of the law of karma, we can understand that reincarnation or punarjanma exists. We will hear more about the law of karma tomorrow. So, the body is dead, but the soul makes the body appear alive. So, when there is life in the body, we should understand that the Atma is there. This is the conclusion of our short discussion on the topic of the soul. And here, you see, this man is standing here with all these machines and he is trying to enjoy his life. But reflect for a moment, who is the one who is really enjoying? Who is the one who is really suffering? Is it the body? The soul is actually does not belong to this world. The soul comes from the spiritual world. The soul belongs there. There are infinite souls in the spiritual world who are eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. And it is only due to envy and the desire to enjoy independent of the Lord that the soul is sent to this material world, which is like a prison house. So therefore, we are all prisoners here. We are all criminals here. No offense intended. But it is a fact. If you go to a jail, naturally you are going to see only criminals. What is the proof that the person is a criminal? The proof is that he is in the jail. That is the proof. Otherwise, how could he have been in the prison? Similarly, the proof that we were criminals in the kingdom of God is that we are all here in this prison house of the material world. Because we desire to enjoy independent of God, so we were sent here. Just like a child who desires to enjoy or to do something that is impossible, the father or the mother gives him some toys, like a toy stethoscope for a child who wants to become a doctor just now. And then the child plays with the toy, thinks for some time that he is a doctor, but it's only a dream world. So even now in this material world, we are living in a dream world. The soul is dreaming. I am this, I am that. I am man, I am woman, I am human, I am cat, I am Indian, I am American, I am Hindu, I am Muslim. All dreams. These designations do not apply to the soul. So the soul is here for punishment, for reformation, for rectification. When that child with a toy stethoscope understands that this is only a toy, it is not the real thing, gradually he comes to his senses, gives up the toy and goes running back to the father and mother. Similarly, when the soul or when we come to our senses in this material world, after undergoing millions and millions of births, then we realize, oh, this is just a fantasy land that I have been living in. It is an illusory dream world. Now I want to go back to my eternal father, Lord Krishna. So let me not be like a rebellious child. Let me be an obedient child to my eternal father. And let me live happily ever after. So, with this sobering thought, we will take a small break. You can take some herbal tea refreshment. Mull over what you have heard today and come back for a short session after that, and then we will have question answers. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. How the soul has come to this world from the material world, from the spiritual world, I beg your pardon. This material world is not the real home of the soul. We are all refugees here, second class citizens. We can never be happy here. We are all homesick, but we don't know where is our home. Our real home is in the spiritual world. And in forgetfulness of that, we have been moving lifetime after lifetime. And there are many who do not accept that there is something like a previous life and a next life. And they say, who has seen the next life? Eat, drink, enjoy and make merry. There was a very famous, or rather infamous, atheistic philosopher in the past, Charvak Muni. And he said, Riham Kripa Ghritam Pivet Yavat Jivet Sukham Jivet Bhasmi Bhutasya Dehasya Kim Punar Agamano Bhavet. He says, beg, borrow, steal,
but eat ghee. Because ghee represents opulent living. If you make things in ghee, it's considered very, very delicious, tasty. So make things in ghee, in other words, live life fully, enjoy life with all opulences. And even if you have to beg, borrow, steal, kill, doesn't matter. Just enjoy. Yavat jivet sukham jivet. Enjoy life as long as you live. Why? Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya. The body is eventually going to be destroyed. And who knows what is going to happen after death? Nothing is going to happen after death. Everything is finished at the time of death. So long as you're alive, make the most of it. Enjoy life to the fullest. There is nothing like next life, previous life. So this is the atheistic philosophy. So, people accept this philosophy of denying God or denying the soul simply because they want to rationalize or justify their sinful behavior. That's all. Otherwise the logic is so clear. So anyway, the point now is that having come here from the spiritual world, the question may arise that since I have come from the kingdom of God, what is the difference between me and God? Am I God? The answer is no. God is supremely independent, as we saw yesterday, and He can never be controlled. But can any one of us say that I am not controlled? Can any one of us say honestly that we are independent? No. We are simply pawns in the hands of higher forces in nature. So we can never be God. We were never God. We are not God, and we can never become God. We are tiny controllers, and God is the supreme controller. Living entities can control the material energy to some extent. And even then, whatever limited controlling power is available to us is given by God as a gift. Some examples: the Britishers went to America many hundreds of years ago and developed this land of America to what it is now. But then, eventually, behind it all, there has to be a supreme controller. That is God. Living entities are simply tiny controllers. We are tiny. Anu. God is infinitely powerful. He is Vibhu. Man can put a satellite in orbit, but God floats billions of planets in orbit. Not only millions of planets, billions of universes He has put in orbit. Man can create a 100-story building or a big palace, but God can create billions of universes. So we are Jivatma. God is Paramatma. The soul can either be situated in knowledge or in ignorance. In the material world, we are all in ignorance. Therefore, we are called conditioned souls. In the spiritual world, the souls are all fully liberated. They are called liberated souls. But either way, the soul is always subordinate to God. So we are not God, but we are God's, apostrophe S, which means we are God's property. We belong to God. We are not God. But there are many philosophies that say, or many people who say, that we are God. Aham Brahmasmi. What does it mean? Aham Brahma Asmi. I am Brahma. Actually, that is not wrong. Because I am spirit. I am not this body. So I am Brahma. I am spirit. I am the Atma. But I am not Param Brahma. God is Para Brahma. We are simply Brahma. Para means supreme. So just like we can be Ishwar, small teeny weeny controllers, but God is supreme controller. So like that, we are Brahma, but God is Para Brahma. So the saying is Aham Brahmasmi, not Aham Para Brahmasmi. Only God can say Aham Para Brahmasmi. Aham means I, Brahma means spirit, Asmi means am. So therefore the word Aham Brahmasmi means that I am the Atma, not that I am the Paramatma.
Atma can never become the Paramatma. But there is a class of philosophers who are called Mayavadis or impersonalists who say that the Jiva is God. And when you get knowledge, then you will understand that you are God. So they say things like Tat Tvam Asi. Tat means that. I am that. They don't give a name. That Nirakar, impersonal Brahman, which is God according to them, they say, I am that. So there is no difference between me and that. Or they use the phrase Soham. Soham means Saha Aham. Saha means he. Aham means I. He who? God. So Soham means I am he. I am God. But I can never be God. I never was God and I never will be God. So one time there was a person seeking spiritual truth. So he went to such a Mayavadi sannyasi. And this Mayavadi philosopher gave him the mantra. He said, you chant Soham. Soham, Soham, Soham. Which means, I am he, I am he, I am he, I am God. So this man was very innocent. So he started chanting, Soham, Soham, Soham. After some days, a devotee of God came there. A devotee is one who understands that God is ultimately a person. And he becomes a bhakta or a devotee of God out of devotion. So, when he met this man, and he heard this man is chanting Soham, Soham, this devotee felt very bad. Because for a devotee to hear that someone wants to become God is intolerable. Kaivalyam narakayate. It is a hellish idea. Just like if a child, having taken birth from the mother, undergoes frustrations in life and then says, Mother, I want to return to your womb. Is it a very nice proposition? So similarly, we should not want to merge back into God. Rather, we should be always keen to serve God as His servant. So the devotee's formula is that we are always servant. So this devotee told this man, don't chant Soham, just add Da before that. So what did it become? Dasoham. Dasoham means, I am servant, I am servant, I am servant. I am not the master, I am the servant. So then he started chanting, Dasoham, Dasoham, Dasoham. And then this Mayavadi philosopher met this man again after a few days. What are you doing? What is this Dasoham business? You are not the servant. You are the master. You are always the master. So just add Sa before what you are chanting. Sada Soham, Sada Soham, Sada Soham. I am always He, I am always He, I am always God. So, after a few days again, the devotee came back. What is this Sada Soham, Sada Soham? So he said, alright, just add another Da. Daso Dasoham, Daso Dasoham, Daso Dasoham. I am the servant of the servant of God. I am the servant of the servant of God. And that is really our identification. To be directly a servant of God is a very high position. Just like you cannot directly go to the king and say, I want to be your assistant. You can be the assistant of the assistant of the assistant. So similarly, to be God's servant directly is very high. But we can be servant of the servant of God. This is a real understanding of the self, of the I, of the Atma. So the difference between God and the individual soul, God is a supreme soul, Param Atma, Parabrahma, and Jiva is the individual soul, Atma, or simply Brahma. God is infinite, Vibhu. Jiva is infinitesimal, Anu. God is supremely conscious and the Jiva is individually conscious. We are conscious only of our body and mind and of a limited range around us. But God, as we saw yesterday, is supremely conscious, is omniscient. He knows everything, past, present and future, everywhere. The God is eternally master. He is Prabhu. And the Jiva is eternally servant, Das. Therefore, in our ISKCON society, When a devotee takes Diksha, he is given a name that always ends in Das. So and so Das. So many times people think that we are all Bengalis and Odias in our mission, because everybody is Das. One time, one gentleman came, said, "I want to meet Mr. Das." So I told him, "We are all Das here. Which Mr. Das do you want to meet?" "Everybody here is Das." So our position is to be servant, God's position is to be master. So that master, that very same Lord, is present in our heart as a Paramatma, as we saw yesterday. So in the heart, there is both the Atma and the Paramatma. In the earlier part of today's lecture, we heard that the Atma is situated in the heart, and the Paramatma, as we saw yesterday, is also situated in the heart. In the Mundak Upanishad, it is said that the Atma and Paramatma are situated in the heart just as two birds are situated on a tree. And one of them is eating the fruits of the tree and the other is simply witnessing. You see the two birds here. The first bird, the lower bird, represents the individual jiva, eager for worldly pleasure. And the other bird represents the Paramatma, the Lord, silently watching everything from within. So the Lord, our friend and well-wisher, is very close to us. He is right there in the heart, but we don't know Him. We have forgotten Him. So it is this Paramatma, or the Atma, who is really the link, activating our mind and intelligence. On the extreme right, you see a symbolic representation of the Atma. There is a Paramatma in between. There is a gross body, brown, and there is a bluish body, which is a subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence and ego, which we described earlier. So it is a Paramatma that is a link. It is a vast subject, but just in the passing I wish to mention that it is a Paramatma who actually interacts and makes sense out of all the inputs that we receive. When you wake up in the morning, who wakes you up? The Paramatma wakes you up. He is a supreme alarm clock. And you wake up. Who is the person who says, "All right, time to go. Now no more, your term in this body is over"? It is He, the Paramatma. Who is the one who takes somebody to a liquor shop and another person to a temple? He, according to our desires. So the Paramatma is the intermediary between the soul and the body. And He is coordinating the activities very expertly. Upadrashtanumantacha bharta bhokta maheshwarah paramatmeti chapyukto. He is a Paramatma. And He is in the heart as a witness, as the overseer, as the Lord, as the Master. Therefore, we should surrender to our eternal Master and Lord, Lord Krishna, who is our eternal Father. We can have many relationships of bhakti or love with Him, but we will see more about that on the sixth day when we discuss different forms of yoga. So the only function of the individual spirit soul is to take shelter at the lotus feet of our eternal Master, Lord Krishna. Our real identity, Jivair Swarupahai Nitya Krishnir Das. The identity, the Swarup, the constitutional position of the Jiva or Atma is that the Atma is forever a servant of God. God is called Purusha and we are called Prakriti. We also saw in the earlier diagram dealing with God's energies. There is material energy, there is spiritual energy. But both are Prakriti. And Prakriti is feminine. Purusha is masculine. So actually the Atma is feminine. Material nature is feminine. And only God is masculine. So all of us, whether we have male bodies or female bodies, this male and female distinction appears only at the level of the body. But actually speaking, the Atma is neither male nor female. But in relation to God,
the Atma is feminine. And it is only the Lord who is the Purusha, who is a real enjoyer. But we have all come here to be imitation Purushas. Imitation enjoyers. Purushah prakriti sthohi bhunte prakriti jair gune karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. We have come here to this world to be false Purushas or enjoyers because we were envious of the original real Purusha. We wanted to enjoy independently of him and therefore sat asat yoni janmasu. We have to repeatedly undergo the cycle of birth and death, sometimes in this body, sometimes in that body. So we should terminate the cycle of birth and death by taking shelter of Lord Krishna, of whom we are the part and parcel. He is the whole, we are the part. He is the eternal love of our life. He is our eternal master. By surrendering to him, eventually after death, we will be able to return to his kingdom and enjoy blissful life forever. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now we will have question answers based on today's topic.
Our body is strong because the Atma is there. And the material world is strong because the Paramatma is there. The Paramatma is present not only in every heart, but he is also present in every atom. It is because the Paramatma is present in the atom that the electrons are able to go around the protons, that the atomic structure is maintained. That's why it is because the Lord is present as the soul of the universe, that the universe is able to function, and then the universe has formed. Just like this body is able to function because the soul is there, the universe is able to function because the universe's soul, or God, is there. And just like the soul imparts form to the body, the universe's soul imparts form to the universe. So only spirit has form. Matter has to be imparted or given form. Any other questions? Yes, Mike? Okay, you can ask the question and saying let his soul rest in peace is a social etiquette. It is something we say, but it is not possible unless one becomes a devotee of God. It is only when the devotee, when the soul surrenders to God, that he can attain not just peace, but happiness. But otherwise, the soul will simply be subjected to repeated birth and death, and according to past karma, will have to go on occupying different kinds of bodies. So, the Atma is actually Satchidananda, but because it is suffering, actually the Atma is not suffering. Just like in a dream, when we dream that we are being chased by a tiger, then the experience of the dream, it appears very real. But when we wake up, oh, we laugh. It's okay. It was just a dream. There was no tiger. Similarly, the happiness also. I am a king. I have so many palaces. When we wake up, we laugh. Oh, that was only a dream. Because we have nothing to do with the tiger or the king. We are in our own position. Similarly, the Atma has nothing to do with the so-called pleasure and the pain of this world. The Atma is simply dreaming. I am enjoying, I am suffering. So what is spiritual life? Means to wake up from the dream. The Atma's Satchidanand position is always there, but it is covered by the dream state. So that dreaming has to be stopped and the Atma has to awaken.
Hmm? perform some rituals also after somebody's death?
Yes. That is to help the soul. Of course, that is another subject. Garuda Purana also gives so many activities that have to be done, the Shraddha and so on, Pinda, etc., which have to be done to facilitate the onward journey of the soul towards its next body. But of course, these are not subjects we discuss after sunset. And in any case, it is a very intricate matter. Many, many things are involved. But suffice it to say that these deal with the material promotion of the soul in a different body. That's like a promotion from second grade prison to first grade prison. It's within the prison. These things cannot help a person, an atma, to get liberated from the cycle of birth and death. We must do these things. But that is not. It is spiritual, it is religious, but it is not spiritual necessarily. When we are awake, we are aware of consciousness. What is the position of consciousness when we are asleep, anesthetized, unconscious, due to trance and in coma? You still are conscious. Otherwise, how would you wake up? If you lost your consciousness completely, and you did, you never wake up. That is death. So the fact that you wake up again means that consciousness is there. But it is just lying in a subdued state. That same consciousness manifests in three stages to the medium of the body. That is Jagriti, second is Svapna, and third is Sushupti. Sushupti means deep sleep. Svapna means dream state. Jagriti means wakefulness. So when you awake, your gross body, your senses and your mind both are awake. When you are dreaming, your gross senses are asleep, but only your mind is awake. I am king. I have so much money, so many palaces, active. But when you are deep sleep, even your mind is inactive. But there is still one person who is active. Who is that? The soul. The soul is there inside. So when Paramatma says, okay, time to wake up, so we wake up from our deep sleep. So the soul is always there, but the body goes through these three different states of consciousness. Jagruti, Svapna, Sushupti. Different state. It is called Pilya or Samadhi. This is a different state of consciousness altogether. So when we become self-realized, then we become situated on that platform. So, coma is more or less the same as sleep. When you sleep at night, you are lost to the world. And then you wake up again in the morning. Coma is simply an extension of that. Death is simply an extension of coma. And the destruction of the universe, where the soul lives for some time, is an extension of that. So it is simply the state when the consciousness of the soul is not allowed to manifest. That is all. So the soul is still there, even in a comatose patient, in the operation theater. But if the operation doesn't succeed, then eventually the soul will have to leave the body. So then he may not revive to Jagruti state. He may remain in Sushupti state. The coma means Sushupti, deep sleep. Does that mean that you leave all worldly duties and just chant and think of the Lord? Did Arjuna do that? Arjuna wanted to do that. What Krishna said, no, you, because you are a warrior, but you have to do simultaneously. It is not that devotees simply sit and chant all day. Many times people ask this question. You are asking us to chant, but is it possible that I can just hold my sit under a tree and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? No. You have to do your daily duties, continue in whatever responsibilities in life you are doing, but make your life Krishna conscious. Make it spiritual. Tasma sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha. Lord Krishna told Arjuna, fight, but at all times think of me even as you fight. So in the performance of our daily duties, always think of the Lord. This is the secret. Why in ISKCON are all the gentlemen called Prabhuji? No, we call others as Prabhu, but ourselves as Das. I am so and so Das, but others are my Prabhu. Because I am Daso Daso Hum. I am servant of the servant. He is Krishna's Das, but I am his Das. Or her Das. So therefore, because we always want to respect others as our master, so we call them Prabhu. We are unaware of our past life's karma, so how are we supposed to lead our present life in a fruitful manner as to gain a better next life? By understanding scripture. By understanding how we are supposed to live our life as ordained by God Himself. Not according to our free will, but according to the will of God. What is the status of souls when the body is in a state of coma? That I have already answered. Coma is simply a state of deep sleep, sushupti. The same state as when a person is sleeping at night. Why can't we know about our past life? Many reasons. What to speak of the past life? We cannot even know or do not even know what happened when we were in the mother's womb. How many of us remember our experience when we were in the mother's womb? How many of us remember when we were in the first standard, every day what we did? Many times we don't even remember where we kept our key 5 minutes ago. So how can we remember what we have done in the previous life? So forgetfulness is a natural function of the jiva. Forgets very easily because maya or material energy is very powerful. That is one reason we don't remember our previous life. The second reason is that death and birth are both such painful and traumatic experiences that they erase all memory. Amnesia, you know, amnesia means forgetfulness. So they completely forget. Many times it happens when a person undergoes a trauma or an accident, then he suffers from amnesia. Main kaun hoon? Kahan hoon? Who am I? Yes, he forgets who he is. So, trauma brings forgetfulness also, additionally. So the trauma of death and birth is so terrible that we forget. Third reason why we forget our previous life is it is God's mercy upon us. Because we are here in this world to be false purushas, imitation enjoyers. If all the time we are going to remember all the sufferings of the previous life, are we ever going to be able to enjoy? Suppose a student has failed the exam and he has got news today. After some days he forgets, so he is able to enjoy life again. But if that memory were to be fresh in his mind all the time, would he ever be able to try to enjoy? Never. All the lifetimes of so much of suffering we have gone through, imagine, the death, the birth, and all the other sufferings, if they were to be fresh in your mind, you would commit suicide instantly. You would never be able to live. So God is saving us, protecting us from all these horrible memories of the past. Imagine, when you were in the body of a rat in a previous life and the cat came to eat you and you saw the cat is coming and then the cat ate you, if you remember that, which happened some 1 million lives ago, what would be your condition? Would you be able to survive and live? No. So therefore it is not Krishna's mercy, he helps us to forget. Yes. The question is, why when we don't remember our past, are we punished for it? A thief sometimes commits so many crimes, so many thefts, When the police arrest him, he doesn't know for which crime he's been committed. He has been arrested. He has stolen so many times. Every day he's stealing in 4 or 5 homes. So he doesn't remember. But still the police will punish him. It doesn't mean that because he didn't remember, the police will say, alright, you are excused now. So we are going to be punished whether we remember or we don't remember. But human life is given to us to try to understand that we should not commit the same mistakes again. Now, from now on, we should lead a pure life. Whatever has happened, has happened. But from now, let us lead a very pure life. As we mentioned in the lecture about Punarjanma, but Lord Krishna says to Arjuna that I have spoken this Bhagavad Gita so many years before. But you changed your body, you can't remember. How is it possible for a person to remember a past life? So the question is, how is it possible to remember a past life at all? Isn't it? That's the question. Paramatma helps. A person who can remember his previous life is called a Japi Smara. So Paramatma provokes him from inside. For some reason, he is not necessarily a fortunate person because he remembers his past life. But for some karma, some reason, he remembers. So that is given specially as a gift, as a good or bad gift, by the Lord to the individual. Arjuna had changed many bodies. Change of body means forgetfulness, birth and death. But Krishna never forgets. Why? Because he never changes body. Bahuni me dute tani janmani tarach Arjuna. He says, you have changed many bodies in the past. But I have never changed bodies. I remain as I am. Therefore, I remember Arjuna. Millions of lifetimes ago, I spoke Bhagavad Gita to you. But you don't remember that. So this is the nature of being a jiva. Why is it that we are born with a body when the soul is a source of consciousness? Can we not live only with the soul? We should. But that will be only in the spiritual world. In the material world, we have been sent here to be false enjoyers. So we have to occupy this body. If you want to get rid of this material body, taking a gun and shooting is not the answer, because you will get another body again, and the body of a ghost, because you have committed suicide. But we should rather accept the spiritual path, so that we don't have to take birth again. Don't have to take a nasty material body with all its sufferings, birth, death, old age, disease again. What is the brain's job? The brain is simply like, how shall I say, like the hardware of the computer. You have a machine or you have a TV. It has some electronic parts, no, inside. So the brain is like that. If the brain is not functioning, let's say a typewriter, a simple example. There are certain hardware in a typewriter, connections of the keys and so on. So the connections are out of order, even if you are in order, if you type A, it may come C. So there is a function, malfunction, in the hardware of the typewriter. Sometimes, if the hardware is alright, but you are not alright, and instead of typing A, you think of A but you type C, then the output will be wrong. So the brain is like the hardware. If the brain is disturbed, then something wrong will come out. But the Atma is different. The Atma is different from the brain. The Atma simply uses the brain as an instrument, as an organ. That's all. Just like the Atma uses the heart, it uses the liver, it also uses the brain. When the body is destroyed, even the brain gets destroyed. The brain is simply just an organ. Hari Hara are the same as it is said in many Puranas. How is it that you differentiate it? Hara means Lord Shiva. Hari means Lord Krishna. The question is, they are the same. Why did I say they are different yesterday? I did not say they are different. I said they are simultaneously same and different. Just like milk is different from curd, at the same time it is the same as curd. That is the relationship between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. How is the soul differentiated if it is so? If not, why is there different bodies? individual souls are all alike in the sense that they are all part and parcel of Krishna. But because they are all unique individuals with their own free will, so they have their own desires. Just like, go out in the street, there are so many cars, Maruti car, Indica car, Qualis, truck, cycle, and all are on the street. The cars are different, but inside them all are the same human beings. Same means not that there is no variety in the human beings. The human beings also have variety among themselves, but they are fundamentally same as human beings. Similarly, the Atmas also have variety. You have one individuality, I have another individuality. You like orange juice, I like mango juice. So we are different individuals. But nevertheless, on the spiritual platform, we are all equal as parts and parcels of Krishna. And we get different bodies according to our karma. When the soul leaves the body, if the soul goes to hell or Narak to face the punishments, how he suffers the punishment without the body? He gets an appropriate body. Not this body, but there is a special body. Just like when you go to a jail, then you are given a different uniform. Not your ordinary clothes. So you have a special uniform. So like that, to go to hell also, there is a special uniform the soul has to wear. It is a subtle body in which the punishment is awarded to the soul. Can a soul be created? No. Because a soul is eternal. No birth, no death. Some believe that one has a sixth sense. What exactly is a sixth sense? Is it really present? There are many more senses, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are all so many siddhis available in nature. But they have nothing to do with spirituality. Somebody has, we will discuss more of that when we talk of different forms of yoga. Somebody creates vibhuti. Somebody can put his hand and get a pomegranate from Kabul, sitting right here. These things are possible, they are called siddhis. But they have nothing to do with spiritual life. We all deal with the subtle material energy. How could one be elevated to the heavenly abode when we are trapped in the cycle of birth and death? There is a difference between heaven and the spiritual world. Heaven is the abode of the demigods. But that also is part of this universe, part of the material world. There is heavenly planets, earth, and there are hellish planets. All are in this universe. But the spiritual world or the kingdom of God is beyond our material universe. So our goal should be not to attain heaven, but to attain the kingdom of God, the spiritual world. Why has the Lord made this universe? For the same reason that the government has made Hindalga jail. In connection with Punarjanma, is the memory stored in the brain or in the soul? It is stored in the mind. The mind is the repository of all our memories. But it goes to the subconscious, it is suppressed. And sometimes under hypnosis, psychiatrists are able to bring out these memories. It is called hypnotic regression. They go back in time. Just like the same Dr. Stevenson. He established there is Punarjanma by putting one of his patients into hypnotic trance. She was an American lady. And he hypnotized her and took her back in life to the memory that was stored in her mind. And she began speaking the Swedish language, which she had never learned in her life, in this life. And when other Swedish people were called, they agreed that this was a perfect accent, and not even the accent of the city. It was a farmer in Sweden. So he was speaking with exactly that accent. How was this American lady supposed to speak Swedish, which she had never learned in this life? The memories of the previous life were there in the mind, and somehow they were brought to the surface. Even our dreams, we dream of some things. We cannot dream of something of which we have no experience. Sometimes you may dream that you have seen a mountain of gold. But you have never actually seen a mountain of gold. You have seen a mountain and you have seen gold. in the dream they come together as a mountain of gold. So this is the nature of the mind, which is a storehouse of all our memories and desires. Is it important to follow spiritual beliefs? That is what this course is about. Definitely, we should do that. What is the reason for bad memories without any accident or trauma? That is simply our karma. Somebody is a Shrutidhar. He remembers simply by hearing once, and somebody doesn't remember even after being told so many times. So that is our karma. According to our past karma, we get a certain gross body and we also get a certain subtle body. Subtle body means mind, intelligence. Mind has a memory power. Intelligence also has a discriminating power. So somebody has high IQ, somebody has low IQ, somebody has good memory power, somebody has less memory power according to previous karma. But still, with whatever basic capacity we have, we can fine-tune it by purifying the consciousness. When we are engaged in sense gratification, the mind becomes disturbed, our memory power goes down, ability to concentrate comes down, but when we start chanting the holy names of the Lord, memory is sharpened, intelligence is sharpened, concentration power is sharpened, and you become happy. What is the position of the soul in the body? The soul is located in the region of the heart. Does self-realization mean soul realization or God realization? Very important, very nice question. Does self-realization mean soul realization or God realization? The answer is both. Let me give a simple example. Suppose now when it is night, you enter into a dark room and you want to see yourself in the mirror. But it is dark, so what do? Switch on the light. And then you see yourself in the mirror immediately. But before you saw yourself, what did you see? The light. Can you see yourself without seeing the light? So light is like God, just an example, an analogy. And you are like the soul. So God realization has to take place alongside soul realization. If you simply understand who I am, but don't understand who is God, your self-realization is incomplete. And if you simply understand who is God, but don't understand your relationship to Him and your duties towards Him, that is also incomplete. So therefore, spiritual life means three things. The first is called Sambandha. Sambandha means to understand who am I, who is God, and what is our Sambandha, what is our relationship. The second is Abhidheya. What should I do now towards God? I am part and parcel of God, therefore I should serve Him. That is Abhidheya. That means I must act according to this knowledge. Not that I just keep it at theoretical knowledge. If I hear, I must become a devotee of God, then I must actually practice devotional service. That's the second. And third is Prayojan. The fruit of what we get. What is the fruit of serving God? Love of God. Bhakti. So when we get that bhakti, that pure love, then we become entitled to go back to the spiritual world or the kingdom of God. So,
one last question.
When the mind is perishable, why is it able to remember things of the previous births? Also good question. But the mind, the subtle body, is not destroyed at the time of death. The subtle body remains. The subtle body acts as a vehicle to transfer the soul to the next body. Only the gross body is destroyed. So therefore, whatever memories you had of the previous life, they are stored in the mind and the mind comes with you, the previous mind. But according to your karma and the new body you get, the mind will be able to reveal itself or not reveal itself. Therefore, the subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence and ego acts as a vehicle for the soul when it leaves from one body and goes to another body. This is transmigration. Alright?
Yes.
Body is operating. Body was the another limitation to the soul, where in the normal condition it cannot come out and go back to the
So the question is, you saw the picture of that mere out-of-body experience. So who was watching from the top? The body, gross body is there. The answer is the subtle body. Did the soul go there? Yes. The subtle body is there. But how is it that the body is still alive? Because temporarily the soul left. But if the soul didn't return, then the link would be cut. Just like sometimes you're traveling in a car, you halt at some shop to buy something, and you leave the ignition on, and the car is still running, the engine is still running. If you come back soon enough, then you continue the journey, nothing happens. Although the driver has left, the engine is still running. But if you leave it on for a long time, petrol will get exhausted, and the car will stop on its own. So if during such an experience, the subtle body is out of the body for a long time, then the connection is cut. Then that is death. So it is actually the subtle body that is observing. The subtle mind, subtle senses are observing the body. And therefore, when the person wakes up to external consciousness, he understands. Alright? So we will stop here. And each o'clock. We have so far discussed some introductory aspects about the Bhagavad Gita. On the second day, we have discussed the subject of God. Does God exist and who is God? Yesterday we spoke about who am I, the understanding of the soul, and the preliminary aspects of reincarnation or transmigration. If you have any questions, for now only based on yesterday's lecture, please feel free to ask, and then we will begin with the subject for today, which is the wheel of samsara, the cycle of birth and death, and the law of karma, a very important subject for all of us to understand. So, do you have any questions from yesterday's discussion only? Yes.
Everything, like if we get up also, Krishna is making us get up. Even if you sleep, Krishna is making us sleep. That is whatever karma we do, that is totally based on Krishna. So, then there is nothing like akarma. Everything is done because of Krishna only, no?
That we will discuss more today. But it doesn't mean that because Krishna is doing it, therefore we have no role to play. Krishna is simply operating the machine of the body according to the way we desire. So if I desire to get up, then I no desire, but I need Lord Krishna or God to fulfill that desire. So I have no power to fulfill my desire. So therefore, when Lord Krishna, as the Paramatma in the heart, he sees that I am desirous of getting up, so he works with the material energy, the body, in such a way that my body is unable to get up. In other words, Krishna is fulfilling our desire. It is not necessary that we are performing Krishna's desire. Krishna is sanctioning and permitting, but it doesn't mean that we do everything that Krishna wants. Krishna does what we want to the extent that we deserve. Suppose by my past karma, I have a certain disease like paralysis. Then even if I desire, I may not be able to get up. Because Krishna considers also what I deserve, not just what I desire. So then Krishna is a sanctioner, the permitter, and he eventually manipulates the material energy
in such a way that we can fulfill those desires. So ultimately, we are responsible.
Now, according to we means, once I say we means, we are actually souls. Now, whenever a soul gets liberated from this birth and death cycle, it is obviously going to meet the spiritual, it is going to meet God. And just like if at all a drop of water meets the ocean, it also becomes like ocean, or it has the characteristics of an ocean. That means the soul, if it meets a super soul, it also can become super soul. Whether this theory is like...
We discussed that yesterday. Asoham Tattvamasi Aham Brahmasmi. The soul is one in quality with God, but in quantity it is not the same. So the qualitative aspect is the oneness aspect. But when the soul meets God, because the soul is eternally the fragmentary portion of Krishna, therefore it never becomes the whole. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Manil Vamsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. He says, the jivas or the atmas in this material world, or anywhere, even in the spiritual world, Mana Eva Anshaha. They are my parts. And for how long are they my parts? Will they remain my parts only for some time? And after you achieve spiritual liberation, will they become me? No. He uses the word Sanatana. Sanatana means eternally. So Lord Krishna says that the soul is eternally my part and parcel. It is not that the soul was my part and parcel earlier and now he will become me. No. He will always remain. Right? So when the soul meets God, there is facility for him to enjoy many, many loving exchanges or pastimes with the Lord in the spiritual world. Where the soul retains his individuality, Krishna retains his individuality, and both make use of their individuality to love each other, serve each other, and enjoy with each other. Alright? And even those souls who go to the impersonal, we have seen that God has three aspects. The personal aspect of Bhagavan, the localized aspect of Paramatma, and the impersonal Brahma, Dhrakar Brahman. So even those who want to merge into that impersonal Brahman, Krishna will fulfill their desire. But even when they go to that impersonal Brahman, they do not extinguish their individuality. Although they desire to, they may be put in a situation where they don't have any relationship with any other soul. But nevertheless, that individuality of the soul is eternal and that can never be destroyed. Just like when a green parrot goes into a green tree, it may appear that he is merging into the green tree. But if you look carefully enough, you will know that there is a green parrot inside the green tree. He has retained his individuality. So similarly, the Atma, even when it goes into the impersonal, then also the individuality is retained. Natva Vaham Jatumasam, he said, not at any time in the past did they not exist. He said, not I did not exist, nor you did not exist, my dear Arjuna. These soldiers, these kings, they also existed in the past, you did and I did. And all of us will continue to exist in the future. Eternally we will exist. So the individuality is an eternal quality of the soul and also of Krishna. Is that right?
That just like in case of your material world, just like if you like just by knowing the atom, we are able to explain many of the material phenomena. If we know the soul, it is possible that we can explain all the spiritual aspects. Whether it is hypothesis is true?
No. You cannot know only the soul, you should know also God. We discussed this yesterday, but complete self-realization means God-realization and soul-realization. All are important.
Realize, then yes. We can explain all the
scriptures. Yes, everything can be understood. To the extent that Krishna allows us to understand, the spiritual world and God are infinite. We are finite. So the finite cannot understand the infinite fully. But still, to the extent of our capacity, we can understand. Just like a glass is small, maybe 500 milliliters, and the ocean is huge. But the glass can fill up the water to the extent of its capacity. Only that much. So it knows exactly what the water is. Then water is in the glass and in the ocean. But the glass cannot fill up the whole ocean. So like that, we can understand God and God's creation to the extent that our capacity allows. To the extent that God allows us to understand Him.
Now, whatever I use our understanding, it is totally based on our vision. Like, if at all I see anything, whatever is reality, what I am seeing, it is nothing but our... If I see, then it is a real thing. Similarly, if at all, whatever I feel, it is a real thing. That means our total understanding of consciousness is based upon our visions, our feelings. So whether this vision or feeling are equal to the actual... Whatever is reality, it is because we are seeing it.
Did you attend the first day?
Yeah.
The first day, we talked about different kinds of Pramana, isn't it?
Yeah.
Seeing is believing, all these ideas we discussed.
Yeah.
So that is Pratyaksha Pramana, this is Anuman Pramana, and the third is Shabda Pramana. So simply relying upon our senses is not sufficient to give us perfect truth. So we have to rely on Shabda Brahma or the evidence of the scripture, and then we can understand the absolute truth. Okay, so let us give others also a chance for some questions. And if you have any questions remaining, you can ask them at the end of the lecture today. Okay? As for the Shabda Pramana, if at all we start worshipping Lord Krishna and suddenly stop worshipping the demigods and also stop performing puja during Ganesh Chaturthi and Lakshmi Puja, will such acts of ours affect our life? If not, who will guarantee this? We are always looking for guarantees in this world. Huh? Proof, Pramana. We always want Pramana for everything. If you start worshipping Lord Krishna, then you don't need to worship anybody else. This fact sometimes affects many people and they say, why do you only say Krishna, Krishna, Krishna? It's not because we have some fancy right from birth. It is because Krishna says so in the Bhagavad Gita. It is Shabda Pramana. So because the Shastra says, so we say. So therefore, Krishna explains in the 18th chapter, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo, Moksha Vishyami Mashuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me, Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Sharana means shelter, Ekam means only. So he says, take shelter of me and me alone. He doesn't say, take shelter of me, but also simultaneously, if you take a little bit shelter of Durga, a little bit shelter of Ganesh, it's alright. No. He says, Mam Ekam, only me. Take shelter of me and me alone. Then I will protect you from all things. Don't fear. Ma Shuchah. Do not worry. So you want a guarantee? Yes, Krishna has given guarantee. He says, Ma Shuchah, don't worry, don't fear, I will protect you. Many times people ask, I have been worshipping Durga for 35 years and all of a sudden you are asking me to stop worshipping Durga and start worshipping Krishna. So what if Durga gets angry with me? Then my life will be very difficult. On the contrary, Durga will be very happy. So Durga is also a devotee of Lord Krishna. You know that in Krishna Leela, she appeared as his sister to fulfill his act, his desire. And she was the one who actually transferred Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini in Mathura. So she is also Krishna's devotee. So she will be very happy. All the demigods are devotees of Lord Krishna. Just as all the ministers are servants of the king. So if you worship the king, will any minister be angry? He will be happy if he is a loyal minister. Not loyal. So just like that, demigods, they are devotees of Lord Krishna. So they will be very happy. But by chance you may think, they are also jivas. What if they forget? What what if you become angry by chance? Then also Krishna says, Mahasucha, don't worry. Even if by some chance the demigods forget who I am and they become angry with you because you did not worship them, I will come and protect you. Just like he did for the residents of Vrindavan in the time of Govardhan Leela. The residents of Vrindavan wanted to worship Indra, god of rain. And Krishna, as a small child, went and told his father, why are you worshipping Indra? Rather, you should worship Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan is supplying us everything. All our food, the grass for the cows, and many herbs and wonderful things. So ultimately, he managed to convince, because Krishna ultimately is the best salesman. So he could convince his father very easily. And Indra became very angry. And he showered torrents and torrents of rain that are usually unleashed only at the time of the destruction of the universe, Samvartaka clouds. And what did Krishna do? He realized this Indra, because of his position as minister, he has become very proud. So let me teach him a lesson. So he calmly and quietly lifted Govardhan Hill on the left hand, little finger of his left hand, for 7 days and nights. And Indra was pouring and pouring and pouring rain, and finally he realized that this child is not an ordinary child, it is my same worshipable Lord whom I could not recognize because he is playing here in the form of a cowherd boy. So even though the demigods may sometimes forget, but Krishna never forgets, so he will protect. But do not worry, Mahasucha. Surrender to Krishna with your full heart and soul and don't worry about anything else or anyone else. If someone insults or humiliates a second person, then is he insulting the Atma or Paramatma or the body? This may be due to his anger or to correct the second person. If he insults someone else, we are insulting all. We are insulting the body, we are insulting the Atma, we are insulting the Paramatma. If I come and assault you, that is definitely an insult to you. If I break the windows of your house, that is also an insult to you. Because you are living in the house, it is your house. So it is an insult to you only. So, in the same way, whether you offend the body or the soul, ultimately the proprietor is also Krishna, so we offend all. Therefore, we should live a peaceful life without offending others. Of course, when we are in a certain position, then we are obliged to sometimes become angry with others for their correction, just like mother and father have to be sometimes angry with the children, but for their good. So when anger is used for the good of another person, in a proper way, then that is legitimate, it is alright. What effect does suicide have on reincarnation? Suicide is also a sin, it is a crime. Because this body doesn't belong to us. Everything belongs to Lord Krishna. It is not that everything belongs to Lord Krishna, except my body, my family and my money, everything belongs to Krishna. No. Even my body belongs to Krishna, my money belongs to Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, I have no right to destroy somebody else's property. Therefore, I cannot commit suicide. Because it is a sin. And the crime, the punishment for this sin is that I have to become a ghost. Bhoot. So then I have to wander in a body, in a subtle body, without a gross body. That is very painful. Just imagine, you love to eat sweets, but the doctor tells you don't eat sweets. And all the time you see others eating sweets in front of you. Isn't it a torture? So the mind has all the desires, the subtle body, but there is no gross body you can use to fulfill those desires. Therefore there is so much suffering. So a ghost, many times, creates trouble for others. Because he is looking for some opportunity to enter a body to enjoy through the medium of their body. And if somebody is very weak spiritually, in the mode of ignorance, then the ghost can easily enter. But if you are spiritually strong, then nothing can happen. Nobody can bother you. Being envious is a sign of the presence of Maya. How can Maya exist in the kingdom of God? Maya doesn't really exist in the kingdom of God, but because the jiva may sometimes misuse the minute independence that is given to him, then the jiva is sent under the control of Maya. The Maya is the energy that is prevailing in the material world. In the spiritual world, what is the difference between mukti and moksha, and how does one attain it? There are different understandings or different levels of understanding. Mukti or moksha generally mean the same thing, which means liberation from the cycle of birth and death. However, mukti or liberation can also mean mukti from hell, or mukti or liberation from suffering. So this can also be mukti, but in a wider sense, mukti means liberation from the cycle of birth and death. At a higher level, mukti means to be situated in your constitutional position, your swarup. Mukti vitvanyatha rupam svarupena vyavasthitihi. So when you are situated in your swarup, that is mukti. What is your swarup? Your swarup is that you are spirit soul, and you are eternally part and parcel of Lord Krishna. That is your swarup. So when you understand this very clearly, and you realize this, when that knowledge is realized, then you are liberated. You have attained mukti even while living within this body. So that is the mukti we want to attain. The mukti of becoming situated in our constitutional position as eternal servants of Lord Krishna. And then when we die and leave this body, automatically we will be promoted to the kingdom of God, the spiritual world.